Cape Talk.
The Open Line. Call 021-446-0567.
Okay, so we'll go to John. John's in Barrydale. Hi, John.
Why can't I talk?
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, who am I speaking to?
Oh, am I on air already?
Yes, you are.
This is Grace from Burkino. How are you?
I'm very...
It's the first time caller. I'm very nervous.
Welcome to the show, Grace. Thank you for calling in. What would you like to talk about?
I'm going to talk about something very bad that happened to me on Tuesday. A guy came with a tag of the city of Cape Town with the logo and the name and the photo.
Yep.
And he was asking me that he wanted to see my meter. I said, the meter is outside. He said, no, you must come to read the meter inside, to see the meter inside. I mean, the board. I said, I don't allow anybody inside the house.
Mm.
And he said to me, you must go and look. There's a number, and you must scan the number. And I said, I'm going to look at the number. And I look at the board. There's no number, as far as I'm concerned. He said, no, there's a number. Insisted. And eventually, I never have let anyone inside my house. Never in my life.
Mm.
And the bit of stress and everything, I allowed the guy go to the kitchen. And I said, but that's not the scanner that he's got. And he started asking me, there's one plug or two plugs. And when I looked, the guy was on my passage. He went straight to the main bedroom. And he kept on asking with the plugs, tried to distract me. He stole my wallet with my credit card. With I didn't see it, you know, nothing. With my wallet, my credit card, I'm a pensioner, 74 years old. He stole my wallet, my credit, with all the cards inside, my money that I withdraw from the bank. I just had time to pay the city of Cape Town and pick and pay because I went out. He stole my jewelry, and he went over. And I didn't see anything was special because he wanted me to switch on the TV. I said, no. I started getting very furious. I said, what are you doing? Switch on the TV. Switch on the TV. No, I'm not going to switch off the TV. Switch on the radio. No,
okay.
I'm not going to switch on the radio. You know all that thing.
Yes. So are you left without money now?
No, I'm left without money. No card. Nothing. I still must pay my telephone account.
Don't worry about your telephone account. We're going into 21 days of lockdown. Do you have enough food to look after yourself?
Yes, I've got enough food to look after myself.
We'll alert the city of Cape Town to this. I've got JP Smith on a bit later. So I want to thank you very much for calling in. I wouldn't allow anybody into the house. And I know there was a lot of pressure, and I know that you're a pensioner. And I'm so sorry to hear that happened to you. I'm going to take more calls, but we will alert JP Smith to what happened. Let's go to Adolf. Hi there, Adolf. Good morning.
Good morning, John.
Kino,
how are you?
I'm very good, thanks.
Okay, fine. My question is, we hear the minister talking about the increased number of a positive case.
Yeah.
So it has been 2 weeks since the disaster started, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So my question is, why the minister is not telling us about the number of cured? Because since the disaster
They do. Let me help you there. They tell you those who recover. They said to us, they give us the number, and they tell you, out of the 300, there are two who have fully recovered. They do give us the number.
Okay. That's great. That's great. I didn't... Yeah. Thank you so much, Kino.
No problem, Adolf. Thank you very much for that. That's Adolf in Malaysia. I'm taking more of your calls this morning on 021-446-0567 and WhatsApp and 072-567-1567. This is not a joke. It's not a joke. People are still going, ooh, can I go for a jog? Can I just be as crass as to say the following? To hell with your jog. You shouldn't be out there. If you're going to put on 3 kilos, you'll still be alive and well at the end of it. to run it off. But the bottom line is there are people that are vulnerable. There are older people. There are people with high blood pressure, heart conditions. And I think anybody's personal selfishness needs to be put to bed. Now, if you want to know how bad it can get, let's talk about Mass General in the United States, one of the best hospitals around in the United States. They've got all the resources in the world, right? Mass General, of course, in Massachusetts, they're going through a bit of a challenge at the moment. Take a listen.
I would say this is following our worst case scenario in terms of pace, in terms of how fast this is evolving.
How much transmission has been out there that we're not aware of?
Just 3 weeks ago, they gave us an inside look at their pandemic plan, including a tour of the hospital's own emergency stockpile.
This looks like a lot of stuff to me, but how long is this going to last?
The goal was to give us about a two-week buffer.
2 weeks?
2 weeks.
That's not a lot of time.
It's not a lot of time.
And now the stark reality. Mass General has already tapped into their emergency supplies. Masks, sanitizer, and face shields. The federal government has yet to fill any of their requests.
We're trying, of course, not to use it all right now. We think we are still several weeks away from the potential peak of the outbreak.
The hospital has 150 critical care beds. They are scrambling to increase capacity by turning other units into ICUs.
We can get up to about 300 or so with the extraordinary efforts we've taken.
And then there are the ventilators.
We've identified more than 200 additional ventilators that we're looking to bring on board.
But if they run out, the hospital has a last resort plan.
We can actually take the tip of this and put it on a T-piece to connect it to two people if we had to.
People can actually share this?
They can share it in very rare circumstances. We do not do this normally.
Because normally, a hospital like Mass General doesn't run out of the supplies critical to saving lives and protecting the staff.
The reality is right now the supply chain just can't keep up with our needs.
And every day, those needs are growing.
And that is Mass General. In South Africa, we struggle to deal with trauma Fridays. And yes, government's working really, really hard. My suggestion to you is don't kid yourself. Forget about your running. Forget about needing to stretch your legs. Forget about walking your dog. There are much bigger issues at play here. That is my take. You might disagree with that, but we can have this conversation. And there's some selfish people out there. It really gets me. But at the same time, some really amazing people. People wanting to help others. There have been some beautiful stories that have emanated out of this pre-lockdown. I'm sure there are going to be beautiful stories that emanate from the actual lockdown itself. There are South Africans who care and think further than their noses and their own potential big belly at the end of the day because they can't go for a jog. So my only request to you is to get real and stay inside, not just for your safety and your sake, for someone else's grandmother who might suffer as a result of your selfishness, if you're one of those selfish people. If you're one of the people that totally understand and you're going to lock down and you're going to do your thing, I'm with you. Let's go to, who do we have? A couple of people here. Let's go to Clinton in Kells River. Hi, Clinton.
Good morning, Gino.
How are you, sir?
I'm good, sir. Just a quick question. I've been on main road, and all the homeless people are still out on the road, and I know they're going to be sorted out. They've got so much baggage with them, their trolleys, their blankets. How are they going to move these people?
Yeah, that's something we'll talk to the city about a bit later. I mean, they've got a plan. JP Smith with Community Safety will be talking to us. I know that the ministers nationally have made a plan around this as well. There have also been news reports that I've seen that homeless people are wanting to go to the shelters. I know that some schools in Gauteng, for example, are going to be made available for homeless people to go to, and I believe the Western Cape will have the same, but we'll deal with that in more detail. I think it's important to look after the homeless.
Absolutely. Thanks, eh?
Thanks, Clinton. That's Clinton in Kales River. Let's move on to Janet in Woodstock. Hi, Janet.
Hi, good morning, Kino.
Hello.
I'm a first-time caller. Well,
it's good having you on the show. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you so much. Okay, now, I understand that we need to go through this lockdown because of the situation. I totally understand it.
Yeah.
Grab it. Okay. My big worry, and maybe I've heard incorrectly, is what's going to happen on the 30th, 31st and 1st when grants are going to be paid out. Now, Mr. Razmataz Fakila announced that all public transport stops at 9 o'clock. So what happens to these people that depend on public transport to get to the different payouts, whether it be the post office, checkers, pick and pay, a bank or an ATM or whatever? What's going to happen to these people? So now they have not been able to buy odds and ends and groceries. They've had no money. They're anxiously waiting for their money. So they get paid and they go do their shopping. How do they get that groceries home when there is no transport after 9 o'clock in the morning?
And it's a very good question. I've made a note of it. It is something that I did ask myself yesterday because they said that's for essential services. They said, go to the grocery shop close to you. But I think practically, yes, the grocery shop's one thing, but not everybody's going to be able to go to a Sassa point close
exactly.
to them. So
exactly.
It is something that we will ask more about. I've put that question down to ask the Premier because the Premier's been dealing with national government. Because remember, the Western Cape can't just go and do its own thing.
Yeah.
It's got to do what it needs to do within in relation to the national regulation. So I'll put that question to the President, Janice.
Thank you, to
the Premier.
Thank you, Keena. And it's all very well Cyril saying there's enough groceries for us to go and shop.
Yeah.
How do we get there? How do we get home? Very important.
And you don't have family who can help you, hey?
But you only allowed one person or two people in a car.
No. If it's something like a SASSA grant, if you need to go to hospital, I think they clarified this yesterday. If I am taking my mother because my mother is ill, the elderly are top priority in this lockdown. So if you need to eat, if you need to get your grant, it's seen as priority. You are allowed to have your son or your daughter take you to go and get it.
Okay. Well, that is a little clearer. But can it be clarified? It's going to be chaos. There's millions of people that going to receive grants.
Yeah.
And they're anxiously waiting for those grants.
Yeah. Listen, I think and I feel it with you. And it's one of the big points I'm going to push this morning. Okay.
Thank you, Kino.
All right, Janet. Thank you very much, Janet in Woodstock. So I think just to recap, Janet saying, hold on, we need to go and get our grants on the 30th, the 31st, etc. Public transport only runs from 5 in the morning until 9. How do I get back home? So, something we lost the Premier. It's something that they're also going to have to think about. Let's go to Justine. Justine Musenberg. Good morning.
Morning, Kino. How are you?
Always good, man. Thanks for calling.
Cool. Kino, I'm a UNISA student in fourth year. And my question pertains to myself and then also to hundreds of thousands of UNISA students who have assignments due in the next month. A lot of them need to go to libraries to access the internet. I know a lot of people don't have internet at home. UNISA hasn't communicated with us what's happening with our assignments that are due or exams. And my final thing is that we've been placed, or I have, and a number of people I know have been placed on financial suspension. And I just don't understand how that's possible during a time like this when banks are giving us breaks.
Who put you on financial suspension?
UNISA has, because I wasn't able to...
I'm sorry, maybe I'm speaking out of point here, but I'm not just speaking as a talk show host, but I'm on the board of a private university as well, and... You know, one of the first things we discussed was, hold on, we've got a lot of young people who, yes, we're going to do this digitally, need to access the data, need access to data, dongles, etc., in order to get the coursework and complete what they need to. And I especially phoned one of the cellular providers saying, listen, this is what we need. And then the Exco team obviously dealing with that. And UNISA should have. And I'm very disappointed that they haven't. As far as I know, just based on what you're telling me now, they have not made those plans. One would expect.
They haven't communicated them with us that, you know, you would be able to. You know, how am I going to, if I only have a cell phone, if I don't have a laptop at home? And I live in an informal setting. How am I going to access the computer to type up my assignment and send it
in? Exactly.
And how can we be put on financial suspension during this time? I work in the film industry. I'm a freelancer. My work is gone. Unfortunately, I'm not able to pay.
Help me out now. What does financial suspension mean, Justine, for the ordinary person who does not understand that thing?
It currently means that although I could potentially continue with my coursework, that I won't be able to access my exam material until I've paid in full. what I owe for the rest of the semester. My exams obviously are due to be written in May. There's been zero comment from UNISA about what plan is being put in place. Should we not be able to write the exams? But let's leave that for now because that's only in May. But the fact that I'm on financial suspension anyway, you know, it just adds a bit of stress in these stressful times, and I'm not obviously able to get hold of anyone at UNISA, as per the usual story. It was just a question to say, you know, how is it possible that an institution like UNISA is putting me on payment on financial suspension when Nedbank is giving me a payment holiday? It seems a little bit bizarre.
Yeah. Okay, my to-do list.
Yeah, my main concern, honestly, is what's going on with these assignments that are due now. And how are people supposed to get these assignments submitted? I don't understand.
My team's sitting and listening to me at the moment. I'm going to ask. I've put it on my to-do list. Financial suspension. How is this possible? UNISA and also communication.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you. Everyone.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. And good luck to you, Justine. Let's see what we can find out. It's one of the things we need to look at if we can tomorrow. It's notoriously difficult getting hold of UNISA, but let's see what we can find out there. I would imagine that people grow a bit of a heart in between all of this, especially given what the country is facing. Stuart in Blue Downs, good morning, Stuart.
Hi, good morning, Kino, and good morning to the listeners.
Hi.
There's just one question that I'd like to throw out there, you know, that's causing a little bit of confusion. You know, the bank says giving some students a breather. What happens to the public now that there's bonds, car payments, and, you know, what happens to people that there's clothing and other accounts that must be paid?
Yeah, you see, the banks have been so slow. My particular bank, I've asked them, can I speak to the CEO? They said, oh, no, they're still busy trying to formulate. The challenge with them coming up with regulations on the 30th or the 31st or whenever it is they decide to do that means that a lot of the debit orders would have gone off already.
And
that is an issue, right? I wish the banks were a little quicker. They're very good to innovate around technology. How about innovate around caring? How about innovate around, you know, making sure that this economy is still intact? Because 21 days is what they're saying. You know, if the curve doesn't flatten, we don't know what might happen after that. So we need everybody to come to the party. And over the next couple of days, we'll be chatting to the CEOs of big businesses that have, you know, lines that, well, money that people owe them. We'll hopefully chat to Jacques from FNB tomorrow, the CEO, to find out what he's doing. We know that Standard Bank and Nedbank have already announced a couple of stuff. So we'll keep our eye on that.
Okay, thanks very much, Kino.
Pleasure.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you very much. So that's Stuart in Blue Downs. Ian in Dip River, good morning.
Yes, morning, Kino. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
Kino, this is a quick one. We've got a small business, and I'd like to get some clarity on this. And we bring stuff in from overseas, and we've been waiting for a container to arrive. That is now most probably a month late. It arrived in Cape Town about 3 weeks ago and then couldn't offload because the wind was blowing and the ship went up to Durban and it's now coming back. We got a phone call from our clearing agent yesterday to say that container is going to be here most probably the 1st or 2nd of April.
Yeah.
The port is working on skeleton staff. But if they offload that container, you have 2 days in which to get it out of the harbour. And if you can't get it out of the harbour, then they charge you storage and demurrage on their container, which can run into thousands of rand.
Okay.
Now, we tried yesterday to find out who could collect to get somebody, because normally this is done through the agents.
Yeah.
But nobody's working.
I think I've got the crux of it, right? So, yeah, okay, if they're going to offload it, then you're going to be charged. And if it runs into 10, 15, 20, hundreds of thousands, then you've got yourself a problem as a business with liquidity that's not always there for many businesses.
Well,
I would imagine.
You know, we are small business.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
You know, there's no ways we can cover those.
I know that David Mania works very closely with the ports. As a matter of fact, we had him on. He's the MEC for Economic Development and Tourism as well. He obviously reports to the Premier. It is something I'm going to ask the Premier when he joins us in the next couple of minutes. So ports, charges, etc., financial implications, it's in there. It's the question I'll ask.
Fantastic.
I don't have the answer, but we'll find.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure, Ian. We'll come back. We'll wrap up with more of your calls this morning. But first, important to give the mic to Sharmila Fisher for your latest Eyewitness News headlines and traffic.
Thanks, Kino. Good morning. Home Affairs Minister Aaron Motsoaledi has assured foreign nationals whose visas and permits will expire during the lockdown they will not be penalised. The minister has outlined provisions for movement in and out of the country during the lockdown, clarifying that only goods will be allowed through. However, he says while borders that remained open during the state of disaster will now be shut for people, those seeking healthcare will be granted passage. The South African National Taxi Council's confused and worried. This after Transport Minister Fikile Mbalula yesterday announced minibus taxis will only be allowed to transport essential service workers during the 21-day lockdown, and they will only be allowed to operate daily between the hours of 5 a.m. and 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. and 8 p.m. Elsewhere in the world, despite the surge in the U.S., Southern Europe remains at the epicenter of the pandemic. After Italy, Spain has become the second country to surpass the death toll of China. The number of deaths rose by 738 in 24 hours, higher than the 683 announced in Italy. These stories and more at 10 o'clock or as it happens.
EWN Traffic.
All routes heading into the CBD are free-flowing. Traffic lights are faulty in fairways at Prince George Drive and Hyde Road.
Your time now, 28 minutes to 10. Coming up, you're going to be hearing from the Premier of the Western Cape, Alan Wendy. Some questions that you've already put to us, we'll put to him. I was asking for clarity yesterday. He said, Kino, we're still trying to figure out the clarity side of things. But I think they're clearer now after having spoken to their lawyers, etc. Fred in Somerset West, good morning.
Good morning, Kino.
Hi.
I'm very fortunate in that I own two residential properties in Somerset West,
yep,
across the road from each other.
Okay.
The second one has a house and a cottage in it. I have a tenant in the house, and I have my mother-in-law in the cottage.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to walk across the road to my second property?
If you're just going to go and kayak with your mother and have a cup of tea, they advise against it. Because if everybody did it, then you know, you're going to have more people coming into contact with each other.
My 85-year-old mother-in-law has meals with us at least three times a week, generally.
Mm.
Surely in this time she can come and have all her meals with us?
Why don't you just get her to move into the house?
What are you suggesting?
Then you'll know how strong your marriage is, Fred.
No, no, no. You're going to be put to the test in any case. We don't need to make it any.
I'm sorry, I just had a laugh. Listen,
I don't want any more suggestions from you. Thank you very much.
Listen,
bye.
Just
bye.
A quick wait. Before you go, they did say yesterday, listen, if it's an emergency and if you need to look after the well-being, right, and you know, 85, very much at risk, right? So if you need to look after the well-being, if she can't, if you have to cook her food and take it over, for example, so that she can eat in the evening, etc., then I think that would be fine. If you have to cook and she has to come to you to have the meal and she's unable to make her own meal, then I'm sure that would be fine. But I'll clarify that with the I keep calling him the president, the premier. All right.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Move in. Let the mother-in-law move in. Hey. Can you imagine that? I'd need to check up on my mom as well. I mean, she's fitter than I am. She's more mentally savvy than I am, which is not very difficult. And, you know, but one has to look after. If my mother needs to go to the doctor, then I should be able to go to her and take her to the doctor. It's essential. Older people, especially in relation to this virus, needs to be looked after. So that's a question I'll ask the Premier as well. Can people visit fragile parents or in-laws? Let's go to Belinda. Belinda, CBD, hi.
Hi, good morning.
Hello. This question came up on the press conference yesterday. The minister in charge said that they still have to now put the finer details in place. You're going to ask me, Belinda, about divorced parents and visitation.
Correct, yes.
Okay. Their answer yesterday was, it's in your child's best interest to stay put in one place. And if you can use digital means to get a young child to speak to his or her mom or dad, whoever's got custody, right, then that is what you should do. They still haven't come out with the regulations. So, in the 21 days, if you say, oh, I'm going to visit my daughter, you might find very stroppy police officers sending you all the way back.
Okay.
So what they are saying is
Does it have to be physical contact? It's 21 days and it's in your whole family's best interest not to necessarily have that contact if it means regular travel, for example.
Okay. So, and in an emergency, let's just say one of the children gets sick or
oh, no,
or something.
Then that's fine. That's essential, right?
Okay.
People's livelihoods, their lives, if you need to go to the doctor, if you need to care for someone who's sick and you play an instrumental role in you know, making sure they get care, that is allowed.
So that is allowed. So the one yes. parent will be
they're
able
not,
to go.
They're not okay. going to allow your child to sit with a 40-degree temperature. At home with no one caring for that child. One of the parents, you've got a duty as a parent to care. So,
all right.
No, so that is essential. My reading of what they said yesterday is that would be allowed.
Okay, perfect. Would you be able to tell us where we can find this on the internet or anywhere so that, you know?
I'm going to find the reputable one for you, and then I'm going to ask the team to put it on our Facebook page and on Twitter. Right?
Okay, perfect.
And I'll run through. I mean, Advocate Rod Solomons has also sent me a very good layman's interpretation, because if you leave government up to telling us what to do, we're all confused. So I'm gonna read out the layman's one, and then I'm gonna put that on our page as well. And I think CNBC also did a wonderful wrap up, which I'm gonna ask the team to put on our platforms.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Belinda, all the best to you and the family.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
thank you.
Pleasure.